This show on the road. So today is going to be the first day of 5 days of reviewing each one of the aspects of the system of practice. So I just wanted to say some preliminary things about the system of practice as a whole before diving into the topic of today, which is integration, the first aspect of this practice, the system of practice. So I just wrote out, you know, the five aspects. The first is integration, followed by positive emotion, spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, and receptivity. So these next 5 days will be focused on each one of these in this order. And associated with each one of these stages or aspects is a particular practice. The mindfulness of breathing for integration, for positive emotion, the metta bhavana, for spiritual death, the six element practice, and for spiritual rebirth, the prostration practice and tree of refuge, and for receptivity, just sitting. Now, I really appreciated the image that Viradama shared with us in one of his previous talks about this idea of curating, you know, and I think that's a really, really good way to look at this system of practice, is that Sangharakshita has curated this system of practice, and he has also curated specific practices, meditation practices, that correspond to each one of these aspects. So in terms of the value of having a system of practice, it was actually quite interesting speaking with, I forget who I was talking with, about the system of practice really acting as a container. It was actually with John. We were talking about that. Because John and I were doing some study with another Buddhist teacher, with Rob Berbia. And we were talking how Rob Berbia's style is very wide open. He just presents many, many different possibilities for how practice may manifest. And John was expressing to me the sense of, you know, it was just, I couldn't track it. It was just all over the map. And what am I supposed to do with all of this? And a sense of overwhelm. And there's something about actually a system that that sort of can act as a container. And then to actually have curated practices can also be very helpful, again, as a container. So when we first engage in the system of practice, you know, it's actually quite helpful to just simply try it out. You know, go for a test drive. Really give these practices some time and some effort. Get to know them, because that's the path that we've all gone through. That's the doorway that every order member has gone through. So when you develop some fluency in each one of these practices, you then have something in common with every single order member in the Tri Ratna Buddhist order, specifically these five practices. Now again, these are curated practices, right? Which means these are not the only five meditation practices. And there's no directive to only stick to these five meditation practices. And personally, if anyone ever said you can only do these five meditation practices, I would not be part of this order. Yeah, I would not be. So it's quite interesting, as we begin to explore each one of these aspects, what you will notice is that the system of practice is actually an incredibly broad umbrella. It's incredibly broad, so that you can basically just pick any Buddhist practice and any Buddhist teaching, and it's pretty easy to slot it into one of these aspects, one or more. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. Well, if you've got an umbrella that's so broad that includes everything, I mean, what's the point? Well, there is a point in that, again, it's just a touchstone that we all share, a language that we all share, really a system of practice that we all share. So again, in this idea of sort of picking and choosing miscellaneous or even random practices, what's missing from that is actually how it all fits together. So what Sangharakshita has given us here in terms of the system practice is actually something that is comprehensive, and it does all hang together. So that's the value in this. Right? So then in terms of exploring other practices as order members, and I'm sure as GFR Mitras as well. You know, I do a lot more than this in terms of the practices that I do, which is fine. And it's good to, it's actually really important for order members, I'll speak specifically to the order members here, that we are all in good communication about what we're doing, you know, about what we're exploring, what we're learning, because it's good to be in good communication. You know, we just learn so much about it. And we also can see how what we're doing is in relationship to this system of practice. Or perhaps it's not in relationship. And that's something that's really interesting to explore. So that's all I'll say about this kind of overview of the system of practice. I just will add one more thing, which Subhuti shared in his talks, that this system of practice, historically, it comes from the Sarvastivada tradition, and then it was later given great emphasis in the Yogacara tradition. So then Bhante, who's that Sangharachita, Bhante is a term of endearment. Bhante Sangharachita. So you will often hear people refer to Bhante Sangharachita as Bhante. He adopted this this system of practice from the Yogacara tradition. Okay, so now moving on to integration. So integration. This is a visual of integration. Right, so integration. What's going on there? So integration is it's very interesting. I was really, really struck by Mike's life story. You know, just this incredible moment of clarity. You know, the before 9/11, Mike before 9/11, gangsta Mike before 9/11, and post 9/11 Mike, and the way you describe just this moment of clarity, this unifying purpose, this organizing principle after 9/11 that just completely galvanized your heart, your mind, your body. You just knew what you needed to do, what you wanted to do. You answered the call to adventure. Right? And it was very, very striking, that contrast of how you led into that story of where you were before 9/11, and then that clarity and how your life has unfolded since then. You know, it's so striking. And this is shown graphically with these arrows in all sorts of different directions. And then suddenly something happens that aligns all of these arrows. And then suddenly they're all moving in the same direction. There's just this unimpeded flow of energy moving towards this unifying purpose, you know, this organizing principle. Yeah. So there's, of course, a couple important questions to ask here, right? This, all these arrows moving in the same direction, like, where is it pointing? It's not pointing at me, so let me just get out of the way here. So where is this pointing? And once we have some sense of that, then, well, how do we get from here to here, right? How does integration arise? Right? These are really important questions to ponder, to reflect upon. So Subhuti, he defines integration. I quite like this definition. He defines integration as taking full responsibility of our karmic energies. Right? Taking full responsibility of our karmic energies. So first of all, let's just define karma. It's very simple, the definition of karma. It's simply self-willed action. It's self-willed action. It's I will, I do, I feel. I will do this. Self-willed action is karma. Right. So now then, this organizing principle. So it's quite interesting right now, exploring what's our organizing principle right now. Right now. So perhaps skip this part and just think about this part. Right? And maybe you're already here. That's great. I sort of am somewhere in the middle, but I do feel that I have multiple organizing principles. I have lots of pulls and pushes, things calling for my attention. Some of them dharmic, and some of them not so dharmic. So one organizing principle will certainly this idea that all beings want to be happy, right? We all want to be happy. So this is certainly an organizing principle for anyone who feels that way. Then we can simply look more closely at this and say, well, what are my strategies for getting happiness? And do those strategies, where do those strategies lead? Are they leading to the reduction of suffering, reduction of harm? Or are they leading to liberation? So Subhuti, he really encourages us to examine closely what we're doing. Because sometimes these organizing principles, they may not even be clear to us. So it's quite interesting to actually just look closely at what it is we do and look at, well, what values are, what picture does that paint? Just simply looking at our actions. Because it's funny, our minds can make up all sorts of stories about justifying stuff. You know? So I certainly have what I like to call my guilty pleasures. Yeah? I've got this organizing principle of where's my reward? This is one of my big ones. Right? So I've been working hard all day, you know, maybe doing dharmic stuff, off on retreat, being a good Buddhist, all that stuff. And then when I'm all done, oh, where's my reward? Right, and that tends to be, well, it doesn't. It is me feeding my cravings, my sense pleasures, you know, and I can justify that. Well, I do justify that, yeah? And I at the same time, right? Come on, it's not that big of a deal. I'm just, you know, come on. It's not, you know, but it is an organizing principle. You know, there's something going on there, and I know where it leads. It really leads nowhere. It's it really leads nowhere. So there can be that organizing principle of I want, and I'm going to go get. I'm going to go feed those sense pleasures. And Triratna, you know, Buddhism, actually, just Buddhism in general, it offers a different organizing principle. Yeah, rather than focusing and fixating upon what I want and what I don't want. The organizing principle of Buddhism is to end suffering for all beings, which includes us. So it's to end suffering for us, for ourselves, and for all beings. The end of suffering. Yeah. So I quite like this quote by Subhuti about what this order is about, what this movement is about. Our movement is about locating our individual effort within a larger communal effort that goes beyond us. Yeah. This last part is super important, that goes beyond us. So I'm going to say more about that a little bit later. But first I'm going to talk about just horizontal integration. You know, the process of integration. How do we get from arrows pointing in all different places to sort of this process of beginning to align those arrows, you know, towards this, towards the greater good? Yeah. Subhuti, in this talk, he didn't speak of what Sangharajita refers to as horizontal integration and vertical integration. So I'll just use those terms, which come directly from Sangharajita. You know, so horizontal integration is really just looking at our present conditions. You know, what are we doing right now, and what are the conditions in our lives that are supporting our spiritual development, supporting our spiritual practice, and what are the conditions in our lives that are not supporting, you know, that are kind of arrows pointing in the other direction. You know, so certainly for me, where's my reward? That's an arrow pointing in the other direction, right? And there are definitely conditions that surround that, and there's a part of me that knows that. And it's very interesting. I remember Damarati once speaking about this. It's really interesting to also look at the aspects of your life that you're not willing to change. That you're not willing to. So, again, my mind, right? My tricky mind's like, no, I'm willing to change that. I'm here on retreat. Look at me. I'm meditating. I'm doing all this practice. I'm Dharma teaching, blah, 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 blah. But then I go home and where's my reward? You know? So my mind can create this beautiful picture. Right? But really, if I look at my actions, there's remorse there when I look closely. Yeah? So examine closely what you do. Yeah. Examine closely what you do. Yeah. So I'd like to tell a little story about my own journey of horizontal integration. Right. So one of my, I like to try on different organizing principles. And one organizing principle was this idea of being at home in the world. Right? And I picked up this little turn of phrase from Manju Vajra. Yeah. I remember this conversation we had some 20 years ago, and he was giving up his home, and he was speaking about becoming homeless, literally, in terms of not having a home. And his aspiration was to become at home in the world. Right? So this home, the sense of belonging, the sense of connection that is independent of your physical home. Right? So I love this term of like at home in the world. So one of my experiences is I like going on solitary retreats. I've been through a number of solitary retreats where I'll get on solitary. And it's really interesting. Like for me, it's when I'm on a group retreat like this, I just do the program. It's easy in a way because I just make one decision. Or I don't even make the decision. I just know I'm just going to do the program. On solitary, I have to create my own program. You know? Again, much to my shame, there's been a couple times where I've left early. Very interesting. I could leave any time. Nothing holding me here. So I notice this experience that arises when I'm on solitary after a few days. I will sort of get, I will become uncomfortable in my skin. Right? Feels like ants in the pants. And it's really just like this restless craving, right? Okay, I've done the drill. Eat, sleep, poop, meditate, read, repeat, 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 repeat. And at some point, it's just like, okay, I'm kind of done here. This is, And I don't stay with it. And what I need to stay with is this experience of just being not at home in my skin. And even that's kind of hard to swallow. That's kind of a tough pill to swallow. All right, so that's horizontal integration. And So, integration. Yeah. So, of course, during solitaries, there's also periods where I feel completely at ease. Yeah. So I quite like this definition of integration as wholeness. It's a movement towards wholeness. And this can mean anything. Right? It means whatever it means to you, really, wholeness. And I like this expression of like to be wholeheartedly engaged. Right? So this organizing principle, this unifying purpose that unifies all of these arrows, right? That to me is an image of wholehearted engagement. Nothing is left out. We're moving in the same direction. So now turning towards doing this collectively, like joining the order. Like, why is there value in doing that? Can I just do this on my own? Why do I need all of you here? And in this regard, Subhuti wrote this in one of his, or he spoke to this in one of his talks. He said, we're all pack animals. You know, we want to be accepted. We want to be approved by others. We want to be liked. We want to fit in. It's quite striking, you know. Subhuti can be very uncompromising. And I think he's very uncompromising in taking this position. And I think it's true. I think there's a tremendous amount of truth there. So now I'm going to speak to this teaching, which Sangharacha refers to as the true individual. You know? So many people enter the Buddhist center. They come into the community suffering with this experience of isolation, of separateness, of loneliness. It's just suffering. It's like, I'm so alone. So they show up at a Buddhist center, and they want to connect. They want to find this sense of belonging, to move from isolation to connection. So then in this idea of we are pack animals, we want to feel accepted, we can simply figure out, okay, what are the social norms here? Oh, I got to bow to the shrine. Okay, I got to do the sevenfold puja. Oh, I'm good with that. Oh, I got to do this. Oh, okay. I got to get a kula. Okay, you know. And just kind of go through that as if it's the drill, with the intention of, well, if I just figure out what I need to do to feel accepted by y'all, then you'll accept me, and then I'll feel complete. Now, in this approach, what gets left out is you. What gets left out is what Sangharacha refers to as the true individual. So, fitting in is not the drill here. That is totally not the drill. The drill here is actually discovering yourselves, discovering who you are as an individual, your own voice, your own unique voice, and then to share that voice with everyone else. And then we can all then learn from each other and share from each other. And then ultimately, as we travel this path together, then we can all, hopefully and aspirationally, we can then dissolve this sense of individuality and move towards a sense of connectedness with each of us together and expand out this sense of connectedness and belonging further out and out to actually include all sentient beings. So in terms of collective practice, there is this collective momentum of practice that one can plug into. So Shanti Nayaka and Prasada Chitta and Vimala Moksha and Viradhamma and I, the five of us, we've been practicing together for years. And the harmony that exists between us, that is a result of years of practice. And it hasn't always been easy. You know, we have definitely worked through some difficulties. And those working through those difficulties has strengthened our friendships and strengthened our sense of walking this path together. You know? The five of us are really very struck by the sense of working together, and that Viradhamma ordained me and Shanti Nayaka ordained Prasada Chitta and Vimala Moksha, and these two generations of practitioners now working side by side. It's a very beautiful thing. So we carry this momentum of practice, which you can feel. And it's something that others, when you step into relationship with us, you can plug into that as well. And that momentum of practice is something that can inspire you, that can carry you. It's a very beautiful thing. So integration, actually Subhuti wrote this. It's not really an idea, although you could create it as an idea. And he describes it as more of a sense, an intuitive sense, a feeling of being drawn towards something. Right? So this idea of a wholehearted engagement, it's not a thought. It's actually your heart being drawn towards something. Being drawn towards. Yeah. So this brings me to the last topic. So that's horizontal integration, finding our voice within a larger collective group of practitioners. Vertical integration, what's this getting at? Now, with this regard, Subhuti speaks about allowing the Dharma to express itself through us and also seeing that it has nothing to do with me. So the Dharma can express itself through us, and simultaneously it has nothing to do with me. So this is kind of written about or spoken about as, in the seven papers, it's referred to as suprapersonal force, kind of clunky language. In Subhuti's talk, he makes a distinction between a karma niyama, self-willed action, and dharma niyama. Maybe that language works better. I find it a little clunky. And the way that that I relate to it is from the perspective of the Japanese Pure Land tradition. And they speak of self-power and other power. Again, it's kind of clunky language. I have a friend who's a shaman. Speaks of channeling. Speaks of receiving wisdom from the other world. Again, kind of clunky, it's culturally, it's just a different paradigm. But they're all kind of fingers at the moon, pointing at the same thing. So the superpersonal force is this sense of the Dharma expressing itself through you, kind of shining through. And one lovely image from the Pure Land tradition is this image of building a raft to get to the other shore. The other shore representing liberation. And in this little story, this Pure Land story, well, there's the shore, how am I going to get there? Well, I got to build a raft. Well, I don't know how to build a raft, so I got to learn how to build a raft. So you got to go learn a bunch of stuff. So then you build a raft. And so, I guess I got to learn how to navigate. Oh, okay, so you got to learn that. I guess I got to learn about provisions. So there's all this stuff you got to do before you can set off on your journey to maximize the possibility of success. That is self-power. Right? You have to do the work, right, to go on this journey. And then finally, after all that effort, you set sail, you cast your sail. And then the wind, your sail catches the wind, and it blows you to the other shore. So this wind, that is other power. This is, metaphorically speaking, this is the grace of the Buddha, the Buddha's carrying you to the other shore. So you no longer have to apply any effort. Maybe a little bit of effort. You got to know what's going on. So superpersonal force, dharma niyama, other power, whatever you want to call it. Another image is this image of shining through. So in one of these seven papers, it was entitled Buddhophany. And I think this is a really interesting word, because Buddhophany, it's a play on a word called theophany. Like, Buddhophany is not a real word, it's made up, but theophany is actually a real word. And theo refers to God, or the divine, and phani refers to shining through. So this word theophany is the divine shining through. So now you create this word. So Subhuti and Sangharaksha have created this word called Buddhophany, which means the Buddha shining through. So I love this image of the Dharma simply shining through. And personally, I'm actually very comfortable with this idea that the Dharma, that I'm simply a channel. I've received this incredible gift of the Dharma, from those who have gone before me. And now I'm simply sharing it with you. I'm sharing it with all. And it's so not about me. Yes, I'm sitting here, my lips are moving, this is me, Dhanadasa, I'm talking. Simultaneously, it's not about me. Totally not about me. Yeah. So I think that's where I'm going to end. So thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.